Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Here comes a throw home. He's going to be out at home. Oh, what a throw by Soto.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 306, McMonagle with you. 877-337-6666. We started with the Knicks and Rangers. We got the Rangers victory last night in game one, 4-3 over the Carolina Hurricanes. 2-for-2 on the power play, while Carolina was 0-for-5, and that is really the story of the game. Yes, it got close, it got intense, and the Rangers took their foot off the gas pedal a little bit, didn't take a shot in the last 10 minutes of the game, but held on. It got close, but held on. Some pretty goal scoring, some pretty passing. Zibanejad's been a stud. Panarin with a goal, and this team takes a one-game lead over Carolina, who's favored in the series, and favored to win the whole damn thing. So a big game one for the New York Rangers. We look to game one tonight for the Knicks versus the Pacers. As we begin our garden party with this week, every night this week, a playoff game to react to. Cannot wait. 877-337-6666. We talked a little bit about the Mets and their terrible series this weekend against the Tampa Bay Rays. Well, the Yankees had themselves a good series as they swept the upstart Tigers, taking all three starting Friday night when they get off the deck after looking like they were going to be shut out again, scoring two runs in the ninth. Stanton and Rizzo with the big hits, 2-1. And finish it off yesterday with a big game from Juan Soto, who comes through with the double down the line, scores three runs, and the Yankees go on to win 5-2. But we also saw a home run from Judge in this game, and he is slowly but surely starting to come out of it. I want to talk about this a little bit because, you know, Rizzo made a comment about Judge, and I've been saying this for a while, and I think it's a comment that people just look at and take at face value, and that's fine, and I understand it's not that much of a out on a limb here to say Judge is important to the team or Judge is the drive. Judge isn't just important to the team. You got to remember, yes, Juan Soto is new. Yes, Verdugo is new. And there's a lot of players who are new to this team. It's the reality of baseball. It's the reality of professional sports. Every year is a different team. And I know it's 2 years ago, and last year he was hurt a lot. 2 years ago, Aaron Judge was Superman. He was. Not just to me and you and to Yankee fans, but to this team. He put on a display offensively and carried what otherwise was a really subpar offensive team. And he carried them to the most runs in the American League. Now, sure, Carpenter had an unbelievable stretch and some guys had decent seasons. Rizzo had a decent season. But honestly, Judge, on his way to 62 home runs in one of the best offensive seasons we've seen, came through in clutch moments, hitting walk-off home runs. In every way, shape, and form, Judge was the best hitter probably anybody on that team has ever seen or played with. He, on a contract year, where at the beginning of the season, he put a deadline for opening day. They didn't reach an agreement by opening day. Brian Cashman comes out giving the numbers. And I think that bothered Judge. Clearly it did. He's on the record saying it did. I think it bothered the rest of the team in some ways. And then he goes out and just performs at a level that even guys like Rizzo, who've won championships, probably never seen. So when Rizzo tells you he's our captain, he's our leader, as Judge goes, we go. That is not just, hey, you know, he's a big part of the team, we need him to hit. No, no, no. Judge is the captain of this team, and he is the leader of this team, and it's not just because he's 6'10", and it's not just because he's their best player. It's because they all look up to him. It's because he is the most important part of that team. He is someone that they all know is one of the best baseball players they've ever seen. And as long as he's struggling, I don't care what Juan Soto does. I mean this. I love Juan Soto. I tweeted out today, every time Juan Soto comes with a big hit, Juan Soto is a New York Yankee. And that's not to say that that was his moment where he's finally a Yankee, because I don't believe in Yankee moments. I think they're stupid and overrated. But because if everyone's talking about moving on from him next year and he's going to go there, I don't care about the talk. He is a Yankee right now. That's all I care about. But I hope he's here for another 45 years. I don't care. I hope he's here, signs a contract for the end of time. I hope he gets a Bobby Bonilla deal for all I care. I hope Juan Soto is a Yankee for the rest of his career. I love him. I love him. I love him. Every single at bat is a war. He takes every pitch so seriously. It's so much fun to watch, and he's been their best player so far this year, and he came through again yesterday in a clutch moment. But I don't care what he does. He will not. And as much as we talked about at the beginning of the year that, oh, this guy, you know, Cabrera is really, you know, learning from him, and oh, they're sitting around the batting practices, and they're watching Soto, and they're learning so much, and the impact he's had on the team. And that's, I'm not saying any of that's untrue or fabricated or anything other than exactly what happened at the start of the year. But Juan Soto on a tear, Juan Soto during a hot streak, Juan Soto coming through with big hit after big hit might win them games. It will not impact this team or this offense on the same level it will if Aaron Judge is doing what Aaron Judge does. Plain and simple. He's the leader of the team. They all look up to him. He's the guy. He needs to be the driving force of the team. As Judge goes, the Yankees go. That is 100% accurate. And so as much as they've struggled offensively, and boy have they ever, with 5 shutouts already, they had a miserable series, including Judge, obviously, in Baltimore, where they lost 3 out of 4. They scored 6 runs in 4 games, right? Was it 4 runs in 4 games? I'm losing my mind. Yeah, 2 shutouts, 4 runs in 4 games. They've been terrible offensively. We will not know what this offense is capable of, how good they can be, or what we expect from them until Judge is back to being himself. And hopefully this home run and this start and getting ejected for the first time ever is something that's going to spark him to get back into it, because they need him more than any other player by a mile. That's they need Judge. And hopefully he's going to come around, because he needs to. Otherwise, this offense will never be good. It will never be as dynamic as it can be. This offense is based. There are some hitters throughout the lineup. The bottom of the lineup can be weak. It's flawed. It's not a dynamic offense from top to bottom. There aren't many. Even the Dodgers, it's top heavy. And right now, you know, Ohtani's the best hitter in the world. But it's top heavy. Look at the bottom of that lineup. It stinks. The Yankees don't have a top to bottom great lineup. It's built on the mashing of those two players in the middle of the lineup. It's built on Judge providing the numbers he does in the middle of the lineup and lengthening it to the point where, I'm just telling you, he's so valuable to this team.
And let's get on the umpires for a second, because I haven't gone nuts, right? As everybody else has. I know I listened to Keith a lot driving in. I mean, he's just all over the umpires. Everybody is. There's bad calls. I had a parlay on Saturday just to have a little fun, and I hit 7 out of 8 games on my parlay. The one game I missed was the Cardinals to beat the White Sox, and they had that ridiculously long rain delay. They come back, and C.B. Buckner calls the final strike of that game. It's a foot outside. But I don't even care about that. I understand how difficult it is. I've umpired. It's not easy, especially the low strike, which I, you know. But the idea that Aaron Judge was thrown out of that game is the idea that Boone got thrown out when he didn't say anything. These guys are absurd. I don't care what Aaron Judge said, which is BS. He said, oh, that's BS, and you've been BSing this whole game. As he's walking away, that drives me nuts. It drives Paul O'Neill nuts if he listens to the broadcast, and it does for me too. If Judge turns around, gets up in his face, yells at him for 30 seconds, says, you're BSing, you stink, you've been terrible all game, stands there and fights with him, that's one thing. He's walking away. It's unacceptable to throw players out when they are de-escalating the situation by walking away. I almost don't care what they say. Now, I'm sure there are certain things that you can't say, but you've been terrible this whole game is not one of them. As he walks away, that's Aaron Judge. It drives me absolutely bonkers. But hopefully he comes through, because this team right now, the overall specter of the Yankees that I just gave you with the Mets, here's the overall thing for the New York Yankees. They're 10 games over 500. 10. It's early May. They're one of the best teams in baseball. This offense has struggled, no doubt. The pitching has been far better than you thought. And we talk about the Mets bullpen, as we just did. This Yankee bullpen has been excellent. It had the lowest, I'm not sure what it did after the last couple days, but going into Saturday, it had the best ERA in all of baseball. We've seen what they've turned Weaver into. He's been excellent. Clay Holmes has right now been the best closer in baseball, yet to give up a run, 11 saves. He's been terrific. The starting rotation, for the most part, you're seeing Nestor Cortez be better. Rodon had the miserable start against Baltimore, but having a great year for the most part. This rotation, Clark Schmidt might give up homers early, back-to-back games where he gave up a home run to the leadoff hitter. Then he settles down. This pitching is the pitching has been overall really good. And the bullpen has been excellent with a bunch of guys. And I wanted to go on this rant a little bit, and I'll go on it now. This bullpen has been excellent with a bunch of guys that nobody trusts. Let's be honest. I mean, you're talking about having to throw out guys like Santana. You're talking about having to throw out guys who, now Luke Weaver, who you're starting to build trust in. Caleb Ferguson, who everybody hated to start the year. Victor Gonzalez is their best left-handed pitcher. You got Ian Hamilton, who had a great year last year, has been shaky so far this year. Ron Marinaccio, who got sent down at the end of last year and didn't start the season this year. Like I said, Dennis Santana. Like, these are the guys. Tonkin. These are the guys in the bullpen. Nobody of worth. Real, I mean, nobody of note other than Clay Holmes, clearly. And yet, I'm going to say it. I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to defend Aaron Boone, because I take call after call after call about how Aaron Boone is clueless. And Aaron Boone has no idea how to manage the bullpen. Aaron Boone has no feel for the game. Aaron Boone's an idiot. I take call after call after call on it. And while I will be the first to tell you that ERA for a bullpen isn't necessarily a all-in-all-out indicator of how well they're performing, and I definitely would think that ERA of a certain reliever or in a game doesn't tell the story of that game always, but considering how much the bullpen is used, considering how many innings they pitch, and considering it's been more than a month into the season, I think it's fair to use ERA as a glimpse into how the bullpen is doing as much as any other stat. Even inherited runners scored. Even inherited runners scored, which the Yankees don't have necessarily great numbers with. But that's only for the starter who comes out once. And that's typically in the fifth or sixth inning. And at the start of the year for the Yankees, it was the fourth or fifth. You still have to get five innings of relieving. And inherited runners and count for relievers count towards the ERA of the bullpen. I think ERA is as good a stat, not necessarily the best, but as good a stat as any, to judge an overall bullpen performance over a month's time. And yet Aaron Boone, who's a moron, has been given a bullpen of a bunch of guys who you don't trust. You don't trust Ferguson. You don't trust Hamilton. You don't trust Santana. You don't trust these guys, and rightfully so. They haven't earned the right to be trusted. They're new. They haven't pitched all that well necessarily. I mean, they've pitched well enough. And yet with a bunch of those guys who none of us trust, and without a real circle of trust yet for this manager to know these guys, to have a long stretch with them, he still manages to put them in a situation where the ERA is the best in all of baseball. And that's not only this year. Every year. Now, a lot of it's, I'm not saying he deserves the most credit. I understand the pitching coach has done a remarkable job, especially with sinker slider pitchers that they throw into the bullpen. Blake's done an incredible job. And Brian Cashman building the bullpens. It's not all on Aaron Boone. But they get their credit on this. And even the Cashman haters will tell you he's a decent guy at building the bullpen. And Matt Blake gets tons of love. But Boone is a moron. Because even though they might have a 2.5 ERA, one of the best in baseball, every single one of those 2.5 runs is Boone's fault for bringing in the wrong guy at the wrong moment. And it drives me bonkers. Are there mistakes? Absolutely. That first game against Milwaukee, Boone was an idiot. I thought he handled the game terribly. I have no idea what he was thinking bringing Tonkin into that situation. I would have brought Holmes out for that next inning, but I certainly wouldn't have brought in Tonkin. I can't explain what the hell Boone was doing. Then he answered the question on John Boy, and I thought his answer made no sense, and I even tweeted it because it made absolutely no logical sense to me whatsoever. He's not immune from mistakes, but year in and year out, this bullpen continues to perform no matter what the names are, and yet I still get call after call about what a moron Boone is. Well, he's putting some guys in the right situation to have good years. He's putting some guys in the situation. He's doing it better than other managers. So a little bit of Boone love. As they're 10 games over 500, and I feel like there's still the same feeling around this team that there was last year. I still feel like a lot of the fan base is all pissed off about the lineup being shut out five times and really not having a great offense yet to start this year. And while that's obviously accurate, they're 10 games over 500. Judge hasn't even begun to start hitting, and they don't have Gerrit Cole, who's still probably a month away at least. They've got a bunch of guys in the bullpen who you don't even know who they are. And Judge, the most important player on the team, doing absolutely nothing, and they're 10 games over 500. In a tough division. And they haven't played necessarily a cookie-cutter schedule. They lost 3 out of 4 to Baltimore. They're going to have to figure out a way to beat Baltimore, no doubt. But that's one series in Baltimore. Let them come to the Bronx. See what happens. But man, oh man. It still bothers me, the reaction to this Yankee team who's off to one hell of a start. And Aaron Boone, who continually provides one of the best bullpens in baseball, yet he's a moron. It's one of the more important elements of being a manager in today's game, if not the most important on-the-field decisions, are obviously the bullpen. They give up less runs than anybody else's bullpen, and yet it seems like every single run he gives up, it's his fault. Every single run the bullpen gives up, it's his fault for bringing him in. Nobody cares that, what Luke Weaver's become and when he uses him or... And even when he brings out Clay Holmes for another inning, you know what everybody says? Oh, great, you do it now. Why didn't you do it Friday you can't win. Joe in Huntington, what's up, Joe?
What's up, Big Mac? How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just so excited about New York. You know?
Right now, this is about as good as it gets, my friend. This is about as good as it gets.
It don't get no better.
It doesn't get any better than a garden party every single night. Every single night.
Hey, maybe it woke up, Judge. You don't ever know.
The garden party?
No, I'm talking about him getting thrown out.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
That's possible.
I think it could wake him up.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. He hits a home run his first at bat of this game, so let's hope so.
Yep. I was happy. Now, answer me an honest question. If they have artificial turf in the infield, would the game be called?
If they had artificial turf in the instead of dirt?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm assuming there were rain delays even at ballparks that had that back in the 70s and 80s. But I don't know if you can grow. I don't know. Who cares? They don't have it. They're going to play with dirt. I mean, that's funny because someone else, a buddy of mine texted me today. I don't know. It's so funny you made that call. Because I had a buddy text me today with the Yankee rain delay and rain out, ultimately, as they won the game in seven innings or eight innings. Why does baseball get rained out? I don't understand. They can't play in this. Football runs on a field too. Well, one, they get rained out because of scheduling. Football plays one game a week. You need time in between to, you know, put a game plan in and keep your players healthy. You can't deal with rainouts in football. And baseball, it's partially the grip on the ball. Because it's, you know, they're throwing 100 miles an hour. It's dangerous to not have a grip on it and know where it's going. Also, it's mud and everything. But, like, who's so fascinated with rain delays? It's funny. Over the this year, for whatever reason, and I guess maybe a little bit of last year, all of a sudden it became a talking point about, maybe because Steve Cohen's, like, filthy rich, but all of a sudden it became a talking point about roofs and domes on the New York ballparks. This is not new. We've been having rainouts forever, but suddenly that was a talking point this year. And now I got a bunch of people asking me, why are baseball players raining out games? Because it's dangerous out there. Yeah, Stephen A. Smith wondering why baseball players get hurt. You got people wondering why you can't play in the rain. John and Maspeth, what's up, John?
How's it going, man?
Good.
Yeah, I want to talk about the umpire and then baseball. Yeah, when these umpires got to get some thicker skin.
No doubt.
Owners, the commissioners got to step in and tell them, you know, to have thicker skin. When you see the referees in the NBA take so much verbal damage from the players,
mm-hmm.
and even in the NFL, you know, these umpires got to expect some kind of passion from the players, especially when there's, like, a bad call, you know? It's getting ridiculous how these umpires have itchy trigger fingers, you know.
It's really
affecting the game. Affecting the game.
I completely agree with you, John. I think it's ridiculous. Balls and strikes and bad umpiring is going to happen. I mean, just bad calls are going to happen. That's part of it. I understand that. In some ways, it's charming, I suppose. Some ways, it's part of the game, the human element. I'm not opposed to, I'm a proponent for getting the call right. So if they have an automated strike zone or a robotic strike zone or whatever that we know works, then I'm all for it. But as of right now, we don't have that. And I understand calls are going to be missed. It bothers me at times. And so if it's brutal all game, it'll bother me. But what bothers me the most, without question, is these guys quickly throwing people out. Judge is walking away. I don't care what he said. He's walking away. You don't throw a player out who's walking away. He turned around, said something to you real quick, continued to talk as he walked away. The idea that he was thrown out of that game is ridiculous. The idea that Boone was thrown out of the game is ridiculous. I have no idea why these guys are so eager to throw people out of the game. And it's also the only sport, like if you think about it, I understand there's a million of them. They throw however many, 200 pitches a game or whatever. But it's the only sport where they literally have rules that you can't argue it. Like, you literally cannot argue balls and strikes. You're supposed to be thrown out of the game. Like, what other sport, like, can you imagine the NFL instituted a rule that you can't argue lined up in the neutral zone? Or you're automatically thrown up? You can't argue that one. Can't argue pass interference. Can't even argue it. Not that they argue very much with the referees. It's a different sport. But can't argue balls and strikes. But yeah, I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
Mattingly swings and he has a drive to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Back to back. Nina belly to belly.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 3:35. McMonagle here with you. On The Fan. So what do I have to apologize for and who do I have to apologize to?
A man I dislike, genuinely. And I've had enough. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know him. I've just had enough of him. And I don't need any more of him. And I crushed the idea of him.
I'm not going to watch it when it comes out. I have zero interest.
You found it. I am not going to watch it when it comes out. I have zero interest in the Tom Brady roast. That's how I felt. And then last night, my buddies were all texting about it. My Twitter timeline was just completely nothing but Tom Brady roasting clips. And I went and watched it, and I have to admit, it was good. It was good. It was very, very good. And they pulled no punches. If you can, it's on Netflix. Obviously, we can't play any of the sound. And I can tell you, I guess I could paraphrase a couple things. I'll actually give you the one.
Who cares? Who cares about roasting Tom Brady?
Yes. That's how I felt. I still do in many ways. And I'll tell you this, too. Let me take my shot at him now before I applaud the whole thing. Who would do this? Tom Brady has no, there's no need for this. And then let me say this, too. All right? It's selfish. Because let's be honest, I don't know his relationship with his ex-wife. I don't know how him and Giselle are right now. None of my business. But she can't be happy about this because it's just, there are a million shots at her. And their relationship and her new relationship and just, I mean, her and her kids, him and his previous thing with, what's her name, the other actress? Bridget Moynihan is, I don't believe they got married, but they had a family together. Like, it's just, it's everyone in his surroundings take shots because he's like, oh yeah, it'll be fun, I'll go do a roast. Like, what? Why did Tom Brady need this? He just signed an extremely lucrative, ridiculous contract with Fox. He's Tom Brady. Why do you set yourself up to get mocked to this level and have your family and everybody else around you in your life get drawn into it and take shots.
Do you know how old their kids are together? Tom and Giselle, not Tom's kid with Bridget Moynihan. Who's older?
Yeah.
14 and 11.
Yeah, 14 and 11.
Can you imagine what they're going to, I mean, I'm sure it would maybe be for years, but what they're going to hear when they go to school tomorrow?
Yeah. 14 and 11, and their mother is the butt of all these sexual innuendo jokes and just, it's, why do this? Why do this to yourself? Why put you and your family and everyone you care about at the, now listen, ultimately, is it just jokes and everybody understands it and it's a roast? Yeah, sure. You can make it through, Tom Brady. But they're saying, you know, ridiculous things about your ex-wife. Who would do this? Who would sign up for this? Why? He just has to be in the media. So that before I apologize, I'm more apologizing to the idea of poo-pooing it because I thought it would be stupid and actually was pretty funny. And it's got some good clips out there if you want to go on Twitter or look it up. But I'll still kill him for being selfish. This is just selfish, man. You're putting your family and everybody through all these insults and everything for what? For what? Did I miss something where all the money's going to charity? Because then I'll feel bad, but I don't know. I don't know what he's doing it for. I don't know why you would put yourself through all this. I mean, I'm Giselle cannot be happy. Whatever relationship he was hoping to hold on to, she cannot be happy. He decided to make this decision and have everybody take shots at her. Everybody. Ron Burgundy taking shots at her. But now that I've got that out of my off my chest and out of my system, that it's selfish from Mr. Selfish, who needs to be involved in everything and can't sit one out. I do have to admit it was pretty funny. I mean, and they held. I mean, I wasn't sure roasts were still possible because, you know, it's funny. There was that viral thing going around with Jerry Seinfeld talking about how comedy's impossible to do these days. You know, it goes through too many hands. People are too sensitive these days, blah, 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 blah. Roasts are still alive. I mean, roasts are still alive. They were brutal. I mean, nothing was off limits. Nothing. Him and his wife. His, you know, Aaron Hernandez. Like, there was everything. Everything. Bill Belichick, obviously. Some of the comedians were obviously all very good and funny. I thought Bill Belichick was there. He had a couple of good lines. He was kind of funny just to see him in that kind of setting. Made fun of a couple of his former players. I thought the real, the one that was the toughest to watch and wasn't good was Randy Moss. He was just, his whole spiel and shtick was that they cheated with Spygate before he got there. They cheated with Deflategate after he got there. Why didn't they cheat with him? They might have won a championship. That was pretty much his thing. Why didn't they care enough to cheat while he was on the team? He missed the dynasty. Everybody's got rings but him. That was kind of his angle. Gronk went on like a tirade of something. It was hard to understand a little bit, but it was a lot of penis jokes. I'm sure if Al's interested, he should go listen to the... Al, if you're listening, check out the Gronk one. He went on a big penis joke thing. But the best one I'll give Tom Brady, because Tom Brady was came on after, obviously, as they all do. And he made a pretty funny... He had a good one that's PC that I could tell you that I thought was really funny. He said, you know, everyone asked me what my favorite ring is. And my cliched answer was always the next one. But now that I'm retired and I can look back at it honestly, when someone asked me what my favorite ring is, I have to say the ring camera that caught Coach Belichick sneaking out of that girl's house at 6 o'clock in the morning. That was pretty funny. I have to admit, I thought Tom Brady handled it well, although there was a joke about massages with Jeffrey Ross, the roast master, made a joke about Robert Kraft and massages, and Brady went up there and said, don't say that bleep again. I'm not sure if that was real or, you know, all this stuff is so hard to tell in the moment, but it looked like he was not happy with it. But, I mean, they were brutal. Oh, my. That Nikki Glaser... She did an incredible job, but she was brutal. I don't know why he would put himself through this. That's what I kept thinking. I just kept thinking, why, Tom? Why? Why do you have to do this? Why do you have to have people like make fun of all the stuff of your life? Just go home, man. Football season starts in September. Just be ready. I don't know. But it was actually pretty funny. So I have to admit, I said I had no interest in it. I ended up watching it because it seemed like a lot of people had interest in it. It was, as far as roasts go, it was pretty damn good. They had a pretty good dais. Ron Burgundy came out, my guy, obviously. Will Ferrell did a decent job. It wasn't hilarious. It was nice to just see Ron Burgundy. But always good to see Ron. But it was actually more entertaining than I thought it would be. I actually got more laughs than I thought it would be. And again, nothing was off limits. Nothing. They went into every aspect of his life. I could see him sitting there. He must have just been thinking, why did I do this? I know most roasts are pretty brutal, but most of the people are like on the, I don't want to say the back end, but it's very rare where, I mean, I know Tom's not playing anymore, but Tom Brady's still Tom Brady. He just signed this enormous deal to be on Fox and everything. Like, he doesn't need this. Right? Like, it's typically, I would think, I'm trying to think of the newest ones. Maybe not back in the day when it was the Dean Martin roasts. Like, some of those roasts were still like Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra is always Frank Sinatra, no matter what point in his career or life. And, like, they're friends, so they all did it. It was a thing. But, like, these Comedy Central roasts, they're typically for people like, you know, Pam Anderson had one. You know, not to knock Pamela Anderson, but, like, you know, when's the last time Pam Anderson had a movie? Like, that kind of thing. To drum up a little bit more, oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, Pam's still around? That should be funny. All the stuff with her and Tommy, that'd be great. Like, Tom Brady doesn't need this, you weirdo. 877-337-6666. Robert in Manhattan. What's up, Robert?
Good morning, C-Mac.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Nice to hear you again. I've been out of the country for a while.
Oh, yeah?
I got back. I was in England celebrating May Day and a couple of few other things. Anyway.
Sure.
Well, we're both, by the way, the only roast that I appreciate should be an entree on a dinner plate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It used to be like the cattlemen out west used to say the only sheep they like was on a dinner plate. But anyway, happy.
That's what they told their friends.
That's right.
But I don't know that for sure.
Well, they did. They didn't like the sheep when they were alive. Never mind. That's another story.
Well,
you watch the old movies. Anyway, you and I are happy even though we're on both sides. Okay. After all, my two teams advanced to second rounds. We won a super game Saturday night, game 7. If we had lost it, I think they'd all be crying in their beer. Not again, but we pretty much polished off the Heat. So now here we go.
Yep.
Here we go. It's inevitable. The only thing I can hope is that, I'm not a Knicks fan. I'm not a Ranger fan. But let's say with the Knicks, I hope Indiana takes you to 7. And I hope we can polish off Cleveland in 4. So my question to you is, who's going to have the tougher series in the second round? Us or you?
Oh, I hate to pat you on the back there, Robert, but I think it's definitely going to be the Knicks. I think Boston is far better than Cleveland. I don't trust Cleveland. I thought, you know, it's one of those series with Orlando where the home team wins every series and they were down at the half by 10. And they came back and had a really good third quarter. You know, Mitchell's a legitimate, you know, scorer and star player. But, I mean, I don't think they're in the same league as Boston. You might give up a game like you did to Miami. I doubt very much that's a great series. I think a good series. I think the Knicks are going to have a much tougher time with the Pacers than the Celtics will with Cleveland. But who knows? And I think the Bruins are going to have a tough time with Florida. I mean, obviously, Florida is the favorite in the series. Florida is one of the best teams in hockey and a dangerous team. And they're certainly going to have their hands full. But I think, I think it would be fun to have Boston, New York in both conference finals. But I don't want to get ahead of myself with the Knicks because I don't want to do that because that I kind of in my gut have that feeling. And I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to admit I have that feeling, but you said the word inevitable. It feels that way. it feels like we are looking at Knicks Celtics. But they have a series against a very young, talented team who can score at will, who just dispatched a Milwaukee. Yes, without their two best players, I get it. Without Giannis and Dame, I get it. But still, this is a team that can score. They have depth. They have legitimate players, and the Knicks are going to have to do things differently to keep up with them. I'm interested to see Tibbs's adjustments here, because I don't think you can go about it the same way you went about it against Philadelphia. This team is a little bit deeper, a little bit more athletic, and really, I mean, Philadelphia, like I said, you know, Harris was bad. Like, a lot of the role players had moments, mainly in Philadelphia, but you had to worry about the two stars on that team. This is a little bit of a more well-rounded team. Yeah, you got, Siakam, you got Halliburton, but Halliburton hasn't been the same really since he's come back from that hamstring injury. He was having an incredible start to the season, hasn't been the same coming back, hasn't shot the ball nearly as well, had a miserable year shooting it from three. But they've got guys, you know, Turner's going to be a different guy to guard. Like, they have some guys who are going to challenge the way the Knicks do things. There's no doubt about it. But ultimately, it's about Jalen Brunson. It's about how the Knicks play defense. It's about how they rebound. It's about doing what they do. I don't think this Knicks team has to play a certain way, but there are certain strengths that have to come through. And we know what they are. Like, they have to be gritty, they have to be tough, they have to make the smart plays down the stretch, they have to get rebounds specifically offensively, and they have to have Brunson be the best player on the court, and they got to get shots from DiVincenzo, McBride, and occasionally Hart. That's what they're going to have to do to win. I will see once the series starts later tonight. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm trying not to get ahead of myself. I'm trying not to get too far ahead and think about Boston. One, Boston's got to get through a Cleveland series, although I think they will, and the Knicks have a very formidable team out in front of them right now. And especially Knicks Pacers, like I can't tell you. And I know I'm only 40. I'm trying to think of the age group. Anyone younger than me probably doesn't remember. I mean, Fleek, do you remember 94 at all? No, right? Way too young. So no memory of 94.
No, I was just under 3 years old. When
okay. Oh yeah, you're that young. I'm sorry, I was unaware. You got a very mature face, I guess. But yes, if you're under 40. You don't remember 94. And that time period. And Knicks, to have what we have here, to have the Rangers legitimate cup contenders taking game one against Carolina in the second round, playing every night a playoff game, starting yesterday. Yesterday, Rangers, today, Knicks, tomorrow, Rangers. Like, every single night this week, from Sunday to Sunday, every night this week, we are going to have a playoff game to get into, to react to watch, to get excited about, to preview, to get pumped for every single night. And it hasn't felt this way where both teams have legitimate chances to contend at least for to get to the finals. And let's get ahead of ourselves. A chance to win championships for both these teams in the Garden. Every night, playoff games, and now adding in the idea that it's Knicks Pacers. Like, I know the teams are wildly different. I know it's been a long time, but for me, the Pacers are always the enemy. I last year we had a lot of debate about this as they were getting ready to play the Heat and the history between the Knicks and the Heat. Who's the biggest rival of this? The Knicks. For me, I understand now things change, but I see a Pacers uniform. And I see, it brings me back to 94 and 95 and Reggie Miller and Rick Smits and Antonio Davis. Like, I hated those teams. Hated. I told you, I literally fell to the, I just got home from a baseball game, walked in the house, and I was in the house for maybe a minute, and I saw Patrick Ewing's missed finger roll. I hate the Pacers. I cried like a little baby on the floor. I dropped to my knees and wept. I'm looking forward to the series. I'm looking forward to beating them. It's going to be real easy to ease back into it. It's going to be real easy to ease back into the hatred for the Indiana Pacers. Comes natural. So right now, I'm pumped. This is as good as it gets. It's as good as it gets. Every night a playoff game and legitimately good playoff teams with a chance. And we saw what the Rangers can bring with their dynamic power play and I mean, instantly. Scoring goals within 20 seconds of a power play. It didn't even get set up with this tic-tac passing. Just beautiful. A couple of beautiful goals in this game. They take a 3-1 lead and kind of, you know, sit on it and made it scary at the end, but ultimately come out on top against the team that's favored against them in Carolina, hold them to 0-for-5 in their power play, and that's going to be the difference in these games, who plays better on the power play, who takes less penalties, who plays better on the power play. That's going to be the deciding factor in this series. At least that's how it feels after game one, after a major talking point heading into the series, clearly the difference in game one. And the Knicks, as they get ready for the Pacers, the adjustments they'll make, and really just taking a breath. Like, I'll be really interested to see how the Knicks perform in game one after getting through that series. That, yes, was a six-game series. They didn't have to play game seven. But, I mean, just every single game was such a unique, story unto itself. Every game came down to the wire. Every game was this knock 'em out, drag 'em out fight. Every game came down to who hit the big shot, who got the big rebound, who missed the key free throw, who hit the enormous three. Like, all of it, just, it was such an intense series. To take a breath from it and now head right back in to a series against the Pacers, who are coming off, you know, playing a Milwaukee team that they, you know, had a relatively easy time with, scored a bunch of points in a blowout. They had a couple of blowouts in the series. Like, it wasn't as intense. And this Knicks team's got to put that series behind them against Philadelphia and get ready for this high-octane offense of the Indiana Pacers. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you. 3 hours down, one more to go as we got until 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Right here on The Fan. We'll come back, continue to take your phone calls. We'll get into the garden party that is this upcoming week. We talked a little bit about baseball. Apparently Jimmy Butler had something to say. We can talk about that. If you saw the roast, I'll take calls on that as well, as the selfish Tom Brady put him and his family in a predicament they didn't need to be, although it was entertaining.